All right. We're recording?
Yep.
Yep, great. I would like to call the May 31st Health, Human Services, and Housing meeting to order. I will begin by entertaining a motion to approve the minutes of the May 3rd regular meeting and the May 18th special meeting. The minutes most. Can I have a motion to approve?
So
second.
All right, so moved by Erner, second by Corcoran. Any discussion on the minutes?
I'd just like to express my appreciation to the clerks for their summary of the presentations of the May 3rd meeting. Really excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
Boom.
And if you could please pass that along to Chelsea.
Chelsea. Yeah.
That was really helpful because I was able to, I've already sent that to constituents that have questions about the this whole thing. So thank you for bringing that up. Legislator Nolan. So with that, I'll call the question on approving both the May 3rd and the May 18th minutes.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, those are approved. Before we get into our regular business, we are going to hear from the county executive team on the progress at Elizabeth Street and at 21 Elizabeth Street, Elizabeth Manor, and I know we are all very excited to hear about how the project is going, much needed housing initiative. So I will hand it over.
Thank you. So happy to provide an update and just to revisit, to start, obviously the county has bought 21 Elizabeth Manor and the city of Kingston. That was $700,000 of allocated ARPA funds, and the closing was July 2022. So we're going to Kingston, and we have been active in developing the property, but unfortunately there's been a number of things that have shifted, and I think it's absolutely time to provide some new information and updates. So there's one additional, there's the $700,000, and there's one additional funding that's been approved by the legislature, and that was authorization for A&E services by way of a county bond for $200,000. So just to kind of know what's currently in place and what we do have a signed contract after RFP with a LaBella Associates, who is the project architect, and we have met with them and been on site a number of times. The way we hoped to progress on this project was we recognized that we needed to do a full gut, and that the interior, after talking to the architect, walls and ceilings needed to be removed on all floors so they could see width of the walls, load bearing versus non-load bearing, status of all mechanicals, and basically that's a significant goal and a significant milestone to get to, because that's needed to do real design services so that we can know what the building needs and so design will need to start after the demolition. We got real close to working with volunteers. Bruderhaus came in with a wonderful offer to use volunteers to do the interior demolition. But part of that process was ensuring that we had all the environmental testing that was needed for the building. We did have a previous, from the purchase and from the prior owner, we had environmental testing. We've had a lot of good news. There was many asbestos tests done, which were negative, and some lead, which were also negative. But really, when we looked at it comprehensively, more was needed, and particularly I noted that the boiler and the insulation on the boiler was never tested and looked suspicious. So we got LaBella in. We also fought hard, and I think correctly, about the end user of this building, which is going to be families, and they did comprehensive lead and asbestos and environmental testing using the previous results so that we didn't duplicate. But unfortunately, the results came back. So this is the first part of my update, if you're willing, which is that we did find asbestos on the boiler, which will be a full removal. We obviously are going to go with a new heating system, but that's going to be a piece that we have to deal with. There is the exterior windows also will be removed, but the exterior caulking on all the windows is asbestos. And then there was a lot of lead through the building, enough that really we need a contractor to do that work, not volunteers. So we have shifted, glad to have the information and got through the testing stage. I had a meeting this morning with New York State Department of Shelters and Oversight, Department of Shelters and Oversight and Compliance, which is part of OTDA. So they know where we are, and they know that our timeline is going to get stretched because we have to do this environmental piece, which is going to require a bid and going to require coming back to the legislature after bid so that that contract can be approved. So I'm kind of leading into like the next steps that are more clear and that we know are going to come. But I think that's one piece, and that's kind of our six-month window going forward of what we hope to achieve and need to do. But the other piece that I think is very important is to have out there an honest assessment from the architect based on square footage prices and based on their best knowledge of past projects that are similar of what the renovation costs will be. And that has something that I did submit to the clerk of this committee and should be in the packet. And we do, so currently we do have on letterhead the estimate, and that's $3.7 million. So that is a higher price than we talked about before. We have met with them, both myself and some of the deputy county executives, to understand that, it's what he said is a conservative estimate. Like, he was trying to make sure we had everything we could potentially encounter for cost. And so, that's just out there for our information. I think it's a little tricky because obviously we're going to be doing this in steps with the needs of the county and the legislative approval needs. We'll have to do the environmental, then we'll have to come back and we'll get approval for funding, we hope. And that'll be one segment. I will say on that first step for environmental work, I am looking to get into contract with one of the partners we have in this project, which is the City of Kingston. So we do have, and we have it in resolution form with the contract as backup. So that's just a side note because I know that's on the agenda. But there is a draft contract for approval for $500,000, and this is going to be ARPA funds coming the other direction, not county ARPA funds, but City of Kingston ARPA funds that are coming to the county, who will then be the subrecipient. We will run the project and program. We will submit the invoices to the City of Kingston, and we will work to get our funding for up to $500,000 that way. Of course, it won't be the total project cost in my belief, but it's nice to know that we came in with ARPA of our own. We have a bond, of course, that we're on the hook for $200,000, and we have the $500,000 coming in from another source. So at least when I look at the next stages of the development, I think it's a great time to use the help of our partner and have had some conversations with the City of Kingston employees, and I'm eager to get that signed and in place. So what have I forgotten?
Timeline.
Thank you very much. The other piece of information, the other document I supplied with the committee packet was the updated timeline. And that timeline specifically looks at the needs of coming back to the legislature and how we will submit resolutions. It is a anticipated timeline, obviously, but it is essentially we're looking at operations hopefully starting in early 2025. So I also think the timeline is an adjustment because I think realistically, given the needs of doing the bidding, not just for the environmental services, but for the general contractor, which would come after design. And then approximately 9 months of the actual renovations. We're early 2025 for operations, and that means, ready to go. We signed DSOC licensure, a lot of things figured out at that point.
if the executive controllers wanted to add something.
Yeah, I was just going to add on the point about expediting the timeline. We're all on the same page about that, and we've been trying to figure out how we can move this any faster. One part of that is not waiting until the demo is done to do the design, so we're going to have this be done concurrently. So once they demo like the top floor, they'll start to do design on that floor and keep going that way. And then the other piece, which we should discuss next month perhaps, is using county funding instead of going for that state HHAP funding. We didn't put that in yet because we still need to understand the cost estimate before we put it forward. But the next step now, either way, is to do the environmental remediation. So we just put that forward with the Kingston ARPA funding. But at some point, we would want to come back and perhaps request county funding so that we can cut the timeline down.
Do you have a sense of how that would affect the timeline?
6 to 12 months?
Yeah, generally if we do HHAP, this is a rough estimate, but it is competitive funding, so a lot hinges on how quickly you can put together a fairly lengthy application. The application isn't complete until you really have building plans and like pretty much ready to go. So a lot of things can go side by side, but I would say 6 to 12 months additional for doing that.
And is that reflected in the table that you provided?
No, that is the quickest I think we could do.
So this is if we used county funding.
Okay, gotcha. That's already good.
Okay. Anything you want to add before we go to questions from the committee?
No.
Well, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, so 2025 sounds like a long way away, but it's 18 months if it's very early in 2025. So I think we should take a deep breath on that. The question that I have is, 3.7 million for the renovation. Did you ask what just a complete raising of the building and new construction would cost?
I did. It's a good question. So no, we didn't go there.
I think that this place has cultural significance to people from its prior uses, but part of its value is location. And so I think it might be reasonable for us to think about whether we and those who would be using the building, how much the value there is in preserving the building as it currently is. So it's not a suggestion that we do that. It is a suggestion that we ask that question, what the cost would be. It might be the same or more.
Just don't know.
Sure, go ahead.
I would imagine it would be more money to do that because obviously you have a complete demolition of these. I mean, we did pay for the building as well, so that's a kind of a hard thing to swallow. But then we would have to demo that building. So I think there would be elevated costs in the demo. The demo is not, a full demo of the building is not going to get us out of the environmental remediation, unfortunately. So. You really have to, we're a bit stuck with that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, would a full demo get us out of the issues with lead paint and asbestos?
No.
No.
It will not. Because obviously those things are going to become airborne. They're going to be, just as much of a hazard with a wrecking ball or however it's done than any other way that we would proceed. So we would have to take care of those materials.
Inherent to the site now.
Yes.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you. under steps where it says GC, is that the general contractor?
Correct. Thank you.
And in one row where we have that, it says, note, if New York State WICS law applies, this may take longer. Can you say more about that?
Yeah. This is an area where the architect has really, I'm sorry, Dennis, I see you nodding, and I'm guessing you know this one pretty well. I am learning it. I'm a more recent county employee, but there's a threshold for upstate counties, so our hope in just the conversation so far with the project architect is that this project will fall under the threshold and we won't need to do WICS law, but it's basically a law regarding how bidding must be done when you're of a certain dollar value for the size of a project. And essentially, it's, I believe it's a state law, and I believe what the state is trying to do is ensure that multiple bids are done, particularly when it comes to like electrical, plumbing, mechanical, so that those are independent bids. And for large projects, the idea is that that saves money by having independent bids. So the reason I put it in is because if we're not just doing a GC bid and we're doing an electrical bid and a plumbing bid and also, you know, everything else bid, it's just more complicated and it could take us longer.
But based on the conversation, he didn't think that we would
true.
Be
yes.
subject to it.
So if we are subject to this WICS law, how much additional time does that add to it?
I don't know. I mean, number one, we have the architect who is going to help us with the bidding. So, and we have a significant, I think honestly the big time elements are doing the environmental work. And then, of course, we hope to as much as we can. If we go floor by floor with the demolition, the architect has said that they can come in and, you know, start design on each floor. So that's partly how we're trying to sequence. Building plans and construction documents are really a big thing to get to so we can do the bidding. And I would assume it's hopefully only an additional month if we had to make it up if it was more complicated.
Thank you.
Yep, Legislator Petit.
Thank you. I've had a little bit of experience with building, and when we were looking at putting a full second floor on the house, we had to present, you know, a full document. We didn't take the top part of the house off and then create something and then go to the building department. Shouldn't we already have the architectural design ready and just move forward and knock another year off of the building? I mean, I can't see people sleeping in their cars for another 2 years.
Absolutely understood. I think we are in a housing emergency, particularly when it comes to emergency housing. This is why I'm trying to lay out the procedure, because unfortunately it's in construction, we don't know, you know, if there's 2x3 walls. I mean, we assume there's not, but like once we open up we don't know, you know, what our insulation needs and how those will be addressed by opening up the exterior walls. I'm just trying to lay out the architect's side of this, where design is difficult. I mean, of course they can deduce design, but they'll probably have to redraft that design potentially, I would figure at some point. I think that's a good bet, because they don't have all the information they need. So this is the process I'm bringing to you in the timeline. I know it feels long, right? But is the quickest and the most sensible that I think we can do. I just leave it there. Obviously, there's pieces and an understanding that needs to happen with demoing the interior and seeing everything and getting the mechanical experts who are part of the architecture team in on site, so that we can do a quality design and a quality renovation.
Just the other piece to that was the architect was saying that if we were to do it that way, then the estimate might have a lot more assumptions built into it, which might bring it higher. So when we put it out to bid, it won't be as low as it could potentially be. So that's the other cost.
We're paying this architect on a monthly basis, though, right?
Yeah, no, not for their work, but for the actual construction.
So he doesn't get a monthly retainer fee?
So they bill us monthly, or they can bill us monthly. It doesn't have to happen that way, but yeah, we have a contract with them. It includes the scope of services. We've received a number of bills from them already. There's a table regarding what those services are and what percentage is complete, and it's not exactly a retainer. It's a as work is completed based on the contract. Did I help to answer that?
Mm-hmm. It just seems very frustrating that, I mean, this building is what, maybe 6,000 square feet?
Yeah, and I actually looked at the square footage estimates today, so you can see that on the, it depends, we have a full basement, mm-hmm. And if the attic is usable, it's closer to like 8,500 square feet.
Okay. Well, it just seems like 3 years to renovate a building seems just
long time.
Shocking. I wrote this in an email to Deputy Executive Contreras earlier. I mean, I can't imagine if this were in a situation with a private company, whether it's a person renovating a home or a business renovating a commercial space, that 3 years would be seen as an acceptable period of time. I mean, that's...
How do you count 3 years?
From start to finish. 2025, so this is now 2023, this started last year.
So you're counting the purchase as part of the construction time. And of course,
well, that is a point.
Let's not have too much feedback, I appreciate it.
Yeah, but I mean, nonetheless, I mean, they built a house down the street from my house that's absurdly expensive and humongous, over 300,000 square feet. They bought the land, they cut down the trees, they built the house, they got everything designed. They put it on the market and it was sold in like 7 months. I mean, it just seems like, you know, I don't know, it just seems like this is taking a really long time. That's all.
Yep, legislator Erner, and then I'd like to go into resolutions.
Okay, thank you. I looked at the total budget here, the $3.7 million. Can you remind us, the city of Kingston's contributing about $500,000, and what the U.S. government and the state government were pledging us?
Yeah, no problem. So correct, it is $500,000, $500,000 from the city of Kingston of their ARPA funds. Of course, we have our own ARPA funds, which is federal dollars, which comes to the county as a recipient, and the county legislature approved $700,000 for the acquisition, so that's already expended. And then we do also have one additional awarded grant. It's $100,000, so it's not you know, going to cover everything, but it's a help. And that is a state and municipal grant from Senator Hinchey's office. I have the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York is basically who I am in conversation with monthly about that. I basically just provide an update. We're in good standing with that grant. The trick that with that grant is that they need committed sources for entire project costs before they can get into contract with us. So that's a tricky thing, and it's going to mean that money will come towards the end of the process.
Can I please ask a quick follow-up?
Sure. Yep.
Thank you. I remember then Representative Delgado specifically being at that, but what I'm hearing from you is that the only federal commitment is what this legislature authorized through ARPA. Is that right?
So the only use of federal dollars so far is the $700,000 of ARPA.
Okay.
There is the 34 total amount from that is with the county.
Right. Okay.
I'll follow up with you about why
okay.
the congressman was there. It's a very specific reason.
Okay.
Any final questions before we move on from this onto another Elizabeth Manor? Actually, good segue, perhaps, to the question of other funding here. Everyone comfortable if we move into the first resolution, which is on the same topic? All right. Thank you so much for that. We very much appreciate it.
Yep.
And our first resolution for today is Resolution 337, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the City of Kingston, where the county is a subrecipient of the city's ARPA SLFRF funds for the renovation of Elizabeth Manor, Department of Finance, and Department of Recovery and Resilience. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Nolan, second by Stewart. I'll defer you if you want to just give us a really quick, well, you already kind of gave.
I would just rely, if there's any questions on the heart of the resolution.
Any questions? Any concerns about accepting money from the City of Kingston for this project?
No.
I very much appreciate this, and as someone who represents the City of Kingston, I'll just say I love this collaboration. I would love to see more collaborations like this. Sometimes it's hard to find ways as a representative that I can see the city and the county working together, and this is great. So I'm very, very happy personally. Thank you.
Good second.
Yeah. I'll call the question on Resolution 337. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Only for the reasons that it's getting dragged out. I think it's going to turn into a $5 million project, and we could have bought a couple of hotels that were for sale and put people into them. So it's a protest vote.
All right.
I'm going to join my colleague. I'm going to be in the room.
Okay. Got that?
5-2.
Resolution number 336, adopting the Ulster County Department of Health and Emergency Services Medical Reserve Corps Unit Organization and General Operation Policy, Department of Emergency Services. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Erner, and a second. Second by Corcoran. Thank you so much. And Director Erickson, if you want to give us an overview, or whoever from the exec team.
Sure. So the Medical Reserve Corps is actually, it's a collaborative effort between my department and the commissioner, Dr. Smith's department, Department of Health. Basically, after September 11th, a lot of doctors, nurses, medically trained people stepped up to assist, and there was really no way to collaborate and direct them on where they needed to, where the help was actually needed. And we ran into that during COVID, right? Everybody wanted to step up and help, but the county itself, we kind of scrambled to coordinate all those efforts of the doctors and the nurses and the EMTs that wanted to come in and assist us, especially during the vaccination process. So we had, I forget the actual number, but it was well over 100 volunteers, 150 volunteers that really stepped up. And we want to engage them, and we don't want to lose them because there's a lot of things that can be done. And MRCs are nationwide. There's a lot of good MRC programs in other counties around us. Orange County has a very, very strong MRC program. We looked into establishing that to capture the volunteers that we currently have at, with the vaccinations slowing down and a lot of the COVID stuff slowing down, we didn't want to lose them, right? So we wanted to establish this MRC as a unit. The unit is actually under my department because it's part of preparedness, but it's a collaborative effort with Department of Health because the doctor has the license and would work on the training that would be done, quarterly or monthly, depending on how things move forward with everyone. They can be used for a multitude of things, not just a pandemic, but, we could have a natural disaster where they could be used. We set up sheltering, and they could go in there and assist with that. During the ice storm, we were looking for nurses to help and go out and help the individuals that were in the shelters for multiple days. They could be helped out. We have different races and bike races that happen throughout the county that are actually very, very large, triathlons and all these things, and they can be used there as well. So there's a lot of great opportunity here to use them as we move forward, and we have tons of these volunteers, and you don't just see 150 volunteers, so we want to capture them, and we really want to cover DMS. So
great, thank you. Any questions from the committee on this topic? Yep, Legislator Erner.
Yeah, thank you. Do you collaborate at this point with other human services departments, social services, aging, veterans?
I mean, we collaborate with everybody when it comes to this. I mean, we really, spread out and have a conversations with DSS, and we work with veterans all the time. This would obviously be available. It's a county MRC program, right? So they could be deployed in conjunction, the request would come in, and Dr. Smith and I would talk about the actual mission that they're being requested to be used or standby they're asking to be used for. Orange County uses them for their the flight show that they do every single year. I mean, they're out there with big tents and standing by. I mean, it brings in thousands and thousands of people that show, and they're out there. It could be used for anything, whatever the mission is. We have that discussion, and are they deployable for that?
You want me to
add something to that?
Mm-hmm. Sure,
it's
go ahead.
A very, you know, organized structure, I think, is really at the heart of this. And we are, the two departments definitely are equal contributors to this, but we have all sorts of protocols defined that are consistent with EMS protocols. It involves both licensed medical professionals and non-medical professionals. So it encompasses both, pools of potential volunteers who could be deployed for different things consistent with their level of training, experience, licensure, et cetera. But it's a very well-organized concept. It's not just loosely accepting volunteers and then having to confirm individual licenses and whatnot. It provides a structure, a training structure, so that it's an organized approach. These individuals have an identity. They are subject to all sorts of regulations by way of ethics regulations and rules, so that behavior is kind of documented here. And, you know, in terms of the, if there are any violations of any ethical considerations or whatnot, you know, it's very well organized and structured. And Everett's correct. I mean, there have been MRCs organized throughout the state for at least a decade that I'm aware of. And we've considered along, you know, the way of the past decade, but this was an opportunity that really brought out those citizens in Ulster County who had the interest to give their time and professional experience, et cetera, to a common cause, as it were. And we felt as though this was a good time to really institute a more formal structure for this particular type of corps.
Great, thank you. Legislator Petit.
Thank you. So I don't know who to address it to, but so is there a continued updated list where if, say, something catastrophic did happen, and I guess it would be similar to the fire calls, what is it called, I am responding, so that it would just go out and anybody who is available would come in, or is it manual, or?
There's multiple ways to establish that. I mean, I am responding can definitely be used. That's an application that's run through 911. We could definitely use that. I know that, you know, during COVID, there was email lists that were created and so on. But basically, once someone volunteered, we would establish that list. And, you know, we could send it out through I'm responding. We could send it out through email, text messaging. There's definitely different ways that we would be able to set that up. The MRC wouldn't be used as a quick response to a fire call where we use IAR. You know, it would be more of a day into the incident where, okay, we need to coordinate them, we need to get to see who's available, what times, fill these shifts. You know, there's equipment that we would have, and we would have to get the trailer out there. So it's more of a coordinated response to the incident, not so much an immediate response like fire, police, and EMS.
Not like a call to action.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question about what exactly we're being asked to approve. I noticed there's a financial impact of $55,000.
So the financial impact should have been removed.
Okay.
So that the $55,000 is a budgeted item in the unit itself. It's more for the unit organization and general operation of it.
Okay.
It's more of a policy.
So the 55 is already in the budget?
Correct. Yeah.
And what is that being spent on?
So $55,000 is, we have a consultant that we hired, it would be last year, to establish the MRC itself, write the policies and procedures. John Wood Consulting, he actually established the Orange County MRC, very well known. He does a lot of work for FEMA, and then equipment.
Okay. Not sure if Deputy Executive.
And another reason we're submitting this is because we may eventually need to apply or want to apply for more grant funding, mm-hmm. So we just thought it would be safer.
No, I appreciate that, and I think it's very much in keeping with the legislature's responsibilities to be approving a policy.
so I appreciate that. Any other?
Do we need to make a motion to change the
I don't think it's actually formally part of the resolution, because it's...
I would maybe offer that it's informational, that it's 65,000
budgeted
appropriation.
Yeah.
You're not amending the budget, so there's no actual budget action taken.
Yeah, there's no whereas or resolution that deals with funding.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm comfortable with that. So with that, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Great. Thank you so much.
You.
Resolution 344, approving execution of a contract amendment for $1.4 million entered into by, it is $1.4 million, right? There's like a missing zero.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you just take a look at that while I'm reading this off to make sure that we've got the price right? Entered into by the county with Gateway Community Industries, doing business as Gateway Hudson Valley through Office for the Aging. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
And
second.
Just second. All right, so moved by Nolan, second by Stewart. And Director Copenhaver, do you want to give us a little overview?
So our Gateway contract usually goes for 3 years, and after the third year, they have two 1-year extensions that we offer to them unless we want to go in a different direction. So we just offered them the extension, and within our contract with them, they have the option to ask for 3% more, and they did. So the contract is more this year. It's up to 1.4. I don't think we'll ever get there, but that's the top limit. And they wanted to ask for 6%, but they're only allowed to ask for 3. So that was the increase, and we're at least going to stick with them for another year, because I think we're both of us needing each other right now. They could use the revenue, and we need them to continue to deliver the meals and congregate meals to our seniors, which is, a growing number.
Great. Any questions from the committee?
And just a comment. I bumped into a PIP of an 85-year-old who's homebound, and, she's struggling. Bills keep going up, but she relies on this.
She gets home delivered meals?
She gets home delivered meals, yeah. So we promised to drop her off some fresh fruit and stuff as well.
Great.
But yeah, it was, she says, I don't know what I'd do otherwise. So I understand that the prices of everything is going up, but I'm hoping.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Is there a threshold? I mean, can you keep taking on any senior that's interested?
We are. Judicious about it. We have, I think I've explained to the committee before that there are three levels of priority. So the priority A is for people who have the lowest income and the most need. Priority B is about 50%. They could pay for 50%, but mm-hmm. they choose to stay on the list. And priority C is people who could pay for the whole thing but want to wait till it's free for them. So we really deal with priority A and B, because those folks on priority C could mm-hmm. could well afford to pay for this themselves. So.
Thank you. I have a question, or just a comment. I know this is a renewal of a contract. So
1 year, yeah.
Yeah, so I would still love to see these have salary information.
I'm sorry?
I would love to see all of the contracts have salary information for the folks that are, for the roles that are performing it. This is more a comment for the county executive's office.
Salaries from Gateway.
Correct. The roles that are performing the services that we're hiring for, the procurement manual was updated last month in order to clarify that contracts moving forward will include a table of all of the roles that are engaged, not individuals, but roles that are engaged, so that we know what the true county salary is out there, even for our contract vendors. Yep.
Yes, I think it'll catch up moving forward now that that's been updated. It's just these are from, they're still coming.
But it's, I don't think Gateway, last time we raised the per meal price, which is how we pay Gateway, that included the $15 an hour. This time, the increase is due to food costs and transportation costs. But that adjustment was made. They gave me a chart of all the different titles, not people, who
who are currently employed in the nutrition program that we hire for. So I can certainly get a copy of that, but I don't think that they're going to have anything to hide, and I can probably find it, you know, some kind of documentation from their HR department that says here's who's in this role, this is the role, and here's how much money they make. I mean, they already gave it to me. I don't have any. I don't have any reason to question them.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yep.
Maybe a little bit off the wall, but if there are people who could afford this and like the service, are there any economies of scale that might come to us or Gateway, and coming to them then reduce our cost from having a pay-as-you-go sliding scale that would allow more people to receive the service with some people contributing to the cost of the service?
So when you have the meals involved, you can have the meals only, but many of these folks that are on that list need other services. And when they need other services under the ICEP program, you must be case managed. And even though we have added to our case management staff, we don't have enough to accept another 300 or 400 people onto the program. But Gateway has its own private meals program that we could, you know, we do refer these
to
folks, absolutely. Yeah. We have a contract currently with Mom's Meals, which is it's a service where people get flash cooled, I don't know how they do it, meals delivered to their home that tend to be specific diets, you know, low renal diets, low weird stuff, I don't say weird stuff, unusual diets that Gateway cannot produce, right? Kind of like nursing home level diets, because when I worked in the nursing home, there were 6 or 7 different diets that you'd have to worry about. So Mom's Meals can actually accommodate that, and we always make referrals to them. Look, if you don't want to wait, we have this, and Gateway actually has its own private meals delivery program that they can also accept, but they want it to be free.
Thank you. That helps me understand what's available.
What they're doing in the meantime,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah,
I
great.
Guess they're okay. Yeah.
Legislator Inner.
Thank you. So I've enjoyed these meals before when I've come to your office, and
yeah.
I appreciate your inviting me. I was just up at the state capitol today, and I ran into the folks from Beyond Plastics, and they were talking about I asked them, well, what can we do here on the county level? And they said, well, how about a procurement policy? So I'd be interested to know, perhaps not right now, but if you would have any recommendation how we could, because what I saw in the meal was like a lot of single-use stuff. I'm just going to use it once and toss it out. A future recommendation about how we could have reusable stuff or less plastic stuff in the meals.
Well, I don't know how you can do that with the home-delivered meals. However, people are using their own utensils with that. But with the congregate sites that we have, right now the meals are being heated individually because during COVID we stopped delivering daily hot meals. We didn't want people to have that mess exposure. And I'd really like the Gateway to start using utensils that are washable, not the forks, the plastic stuff. I'm totally with you on that. The meal itself comes in a container from the purveyor. The purveyor is in Connecticut, but it doesn't matter who it does. They all kind of use the same things, and they're always things that can tolerate 300 or 350 degrees in either a microwave or a regular oven in order to heat up the meal properly. So I don't know what else there is out there that the purveyors can look into. It is recyclable. There's a little thing on the, you know, the one or the two or whatever the thing is. How many people do it, I don't know. But my first step with Gateway is to try to get all of the sites themselves, the congregate sites, to start using reusable silverware and glassware. Because we have dishwashers and stuff, so why not?
Thank you.
All right, so I think we can call a question on 344. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
You too.
Tonight.
Resolution 345, approving the execution of a contract for $133,088.34 entered into by the county with Family of Woodstock through the Youth Bureau. And I have a motion to discuss. Moved by Nolan, and a second.
Second
by Corcoran. I will defer to Director Dawson to give a quick overview here.
So the 133 is for, excuse me, for Family House.
the state gives us funding for family house and also transition and living. So you're probably going to have another one following, right?
Yeah.
Family house is, it actually boards families. You guys know, you guys already know what they do.
Okay.
So the funding is actually reimbursed to the county at 60%. So that's why that figure is there. They actually, they request funding from us, but we have to cater to the reimbursement by the state, which is at 60%, and the county pays the remaining portion of it.
Thank you, and I'll just, I want to thank Deputy Executive Contreras for sending over the contract and for the salary information, very helpful, thank you.
Thank you.
And that should have been distributed out to the committee via email. Will be included in backup. Anyone have any questions for Director Dawson or anyone else?
I'm sorry. Chair, did you say that was part of our packet that we had already received? I just didn't.
It was emailed out today.
Oh, that's why I didn't see it.
Yeah. Yeah, there were a couple. I think this one and the next one were emailed over today.
Okay.
The salary stuff information. So. All right. If there are no other questions, then I'll call the question on Resolution 345. All those. Oh, yep. Legislator Petit.
I do. Well, there's several increases to family, and I think there. I've heard that families at capacity. So are we expanding?
The Brentwood shelter is not at capacity. There are programs under our shelters
are,
that are
okay.
full, but the family house is not. We. Have been in contact with the county. The county has expressed that they would like to use family house more. We're, like today, we're at about 7 and our capacity is 14.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yep, Director Dawson.
And I'd like to just add to that. Thank you, Michael, for doing that. I call him at off hours and ask for support for kids that are homeless or that are having disputes with their parents. And Michael Berg is always very, very helpful with me because of Family House. So it's very important. And I visit there all the time. As a matter of fact, I think I'll be going there tomorrow. When the state comes, I go also. They're very, very useful. It's one of the few resources that I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Also,
yep,
I want to thank Michael for sending over all the salary information today at short notice.
Thank you so much.
I asked him this morning and sent it over.
Thank you,
if there are questions about the functions of any of the people listed, I'd be happy to answer them. You can call me or I'll come back if you need.
Great, thank you. All right, so with that, we can call the question, I think, on 345. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 346, approving the execution of a contract for $84,375 instituted by the county with Family of Woodstock, again with the Youth Bureau. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Absolutely.
Moved
second.
By Nolan, or moved by Corcoran, second by Nolan. And I will defer to Director Dawson for a very brief just overview of this one.
Transitional living, this one is for equally as important. I've actually visited, I think, when I was here previously, in reference to this, each year we have to get approval for any contracts over $50,000, and I'm grateful that I have, that the executive team is on top of this. Thank you, gentlemen, for getting that salaries. I appreciate that. It's very important. You guys are very, very thorough, and I respect that. I appreciate that. Transitional living helps with specific situations where, I'll give you an example of the best way I can actually do this. We had a young girl that was, her mom passed away. She had no one else. She was from New York originally. Ellenville, New York, she floated around, and her mom had several things going on while she was alive. This little girl found her mother, and transitional living took her in. While she was with them, she ended up getting pregnant. They supported her. They supported the baby. They took her to resources while she was with them. They baked cookies with them. Like, I can't say enough about transitional living and what they do for kids that are in this situation, except I wish I had more of transitional living.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any questions from the committee? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That was unanimous. Resolution 338, approving the execution of an amendment to the intermunicipal agreement with the City of Kingston to support the pilot program, Kingston Mobile Mental Health Team, Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Happy to move it.
Moved by Nolan, second by Petit. And I will defer to Director McDonald, or I don't know if it's got here.
Yeah, no problem. So this is just an extension of an MOU that we have with the City of Kingston. The City of Kingston was an awardee of a community block grant. I want to say the award came in probably about 2 years ago. The decision was made when they were applying for the grant that they would utilize Access Supports for Living, who operates our mobile mental health team, to make sure that there was a cohesive stream between the mobile team. So this mobile team works specifically in Kingston and partnered with an EMT, and a clinician. But we wanted them connected to the continuum of care, so we thought that having the same provider and operator would be the best way to be able to accomplish that. So instead of the City of Kingston going through a procurement process on their own, they utilize our service and do that through an MOU. The monies came in, it was harder to get the contracts going, and then there was a situation with staffing and onboarding staffing. So because of that, we wanted to be able to extend out the contract to really fulfill the mission.
Great. Thank you. And I should have said Commissioner McDonald's about earlier. Any questions from the committee? All right.
Wonderful program.
Great. So with that, I will call the question on 338. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Fantastic. Resolution number 339, amending the Ulster County budget to accept additional funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health for increased funding for minimum wage personnel services enhancements through the Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Nolan. Can I have a second?
Second.
Second by Stewart. I think this one's pretty straightforward, but if there's anything that you want to add, Commissioner?
Nothing additional. You'll see me a lot between accepting the money from the state as they do their rate adjustments and us needing to amend the contract in order to actually move the money around. So this is just the ongoing efforts of the state, which we'll very much appreciate. This will help in terms of staff retention and recruitment.
Great. Yep. Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Minimum wage personnel services enhancement sounds like a fancy phrase. What does that actually mean?
I believe it is a matter, the state took a look at their rates to make sure that all of these specific programs that are going to be receiving these dollars are at least at a minimum wage.
My understanding is that people who are in these programs who are at minimum wage will get this as the fraction of this money. It's not a lot.
It's not a lot.
But it's a little bump above minimum wage, is my understanding.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, so with that, we can call the question on Resolution 339. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that one's unanimous. Resolution number 340, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $257,767 entered into by the county with Aster Services for Children and Families from the Department of Mental Health.
So moved.
And we'll have a second.
Second.
All right, moved by Nolan, second by Corcoran. And Commissioner McDonald, if you want to give us a brief overview.
Sure. This was another amendment to our state aid letter that just let us know that they were making some rate adjustments. This is one where it wasn't necessarily directly connected to work that are under our auspices. So the school-based clinics, the Aster Services have multiple school-based clinics within our school district. They run them independently with the district. These dollars are supposed to be able to help them in certain areas as well. They can use it with technology. They can use it with personal service enhancements, again, with staff recruitment. But it's truly a pass-through. If they had asked me, is this where we think the money should go? I don't know if I necessarily would have prioritized this, but I would definitely be the conduit to get it to the school-based clinic.
Any questions?
Yeah,
Legislator Erner.
I'm sorry, Commissioner McDonald, you opened it up, because can you just say a little bit more about the last thing you said? You might not have prioritized it.
Right. So our school-based clinics have the ability to bill like a regular community clinic. I would have been looking to prioritize some of those services that are coming straight from like state funding, like, you know, being able to do a little bit more case management that's not necessarily Medicaid billing that allows for us to open it up for the kids that we can serve. I would have loved to expand our home-based crisis intervention services. That's another complete, that's a non-billable service that is coming just through state aid. I would have liked to have been able to do that. There's nothing wrong with doing this. Again, it's about being able to recruit staff and keep them. So training them, allowing for helping with their licensure, all of those things, they can use the money in that way. But I don't know if I would have said, or if our LGU here locally would have said, this is the area that necessarily needs it. They may have been getting other statewide advocacy, because this was, you know, this is coming for school-based programs throughout the state, and this is just our little piece of it. So I understand, and of course we'd never turn money away, but on the local level here, I would have prioritized it differently.
Thank you.
Yeah, Legislative Stewart.
And I was wondering if you could just maybe provide a brief explanation of the Families Together program.
Families Together?
Item D.
Is that a different resolution?
Program. Actually, yeah, Families Together has changed over the years to where now it really is just a connection of the warm line, in which the warm line that ASTER runs allows for family members to speak to other family members, other peers that are connected.
So it's like a peer counseling.
Yes, yeah, like a peer counseling type of a thing. It was a much bigger thing. We had groups. We had respite through the YMCA, but now it's really just connected to the warm line.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Great.
Yep.
Legislator Lopez?
I'm usually pretty good with the acronyms. LGU.
Local Governmental Unit, that's our designation.
Gotcha.
That allows for
yeah,
us
that
to take the money.
That one slips away.
Yes. Local. Sorry.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
A new software for...
all right, so we'll call the question on 340. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that was unanimous. Excellent. 341, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $485,
yeah.
Is this right? causing the excess aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with Family of Woodstock through the Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I want to move it.
Okay. You got it.
I want to second it.
Okay, you got it, legislator. It's on the floor for discussion, and I'll defer to Commissioner McDonald for
sure.
A brief overview.
From Resolution 339, the total number of the increase for personal services was about $11,000. So for the programs that have the ability to get them that are eligible, we have to amend their contract, especially if it goes over $50,000. So for Family of Woodstock, they got an additional
$485,000.
What
do you do with it all?
Yeah.
And we want to make sure they get it.
We want them to get it.
That's
well, it's supposed to be for increasing people's salary.
Yeah.
We did a lot of that last year. This will not address any of that, but $485 is better than nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's in the right direction.
Yeah, but it gives you an indication of what Tara was saying before. These are very, very small increases.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
All right. Resolution 341, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
All right. Resolution number 342, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $320,100 entered into by the county with Family of Woodstock through the Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Second.
All right, moved by Nolan, second by Petit. And Commissioner Iaposi, do you want to give us an overview here on this?
Sure. So this is specifically to be able to provide reimbursement to the Family of Woodstock for hotel reservation expenditures that they incurred during the 22-23 code flu season, which basically goes roughly from November 1st to March 31st. And I think you're all very well familiar with what Code Blue is. It was arrived at in connection with an executive order from Governor Cuomo on January 3rd, 2016. And it basically required that every county house any individuals and families when this actually what we experienced this past code blue season was that as we tracked the expenditure that Family of Woodstock was incurring in November, December, January, February, and March, we realized that the amounts that they would be invoicing us for were significantly higher than what we had allocated as part of our Code Blue program. And for context, our 22-23 Code Blue program was for $965,000, which was all approved, and that was to cover expenditures for the warming center that we have here in Kingston. We also contemplated a warming center being established in Ellenville, which was not able to be arrived at, and for the cost that Family of Woodstock would incur. So this is 100% funded through that approved plan.
And is the additional location, is that part of the reason for the significant cost increase?
That was why we had submitted a 22-23 plan for that amount.
Right.
But we were also trying to keep track of the possibility that, you know, we would, in the event that we weren't able to arrive at establishing another warming center, be placing a lot of individuals and families during Code Blue activations. So we basically did the allocation in anticipation of having a second warming center, but in the event that was not able to be accomplished, we still wanted to have the funds available because we knew that it would result in there being hotel reservations having to be made. And that's exactly what ended up happening.
We've spent about $320,000 already. That's going to be reimbursed to us when the contract changed.
Okay.
The original contract was for $49,000, because that's how many families we were putting up in Code Blue. But this year was totally different.
Yeah, Commissioner Stewart.
And do we anticipate having a warming center up and running in Ellenville for this coming winter?
You know, a lot of effort was expended on trying to locate a site in Ellenville. Catholic Charities, who is our provider for the warming center on Elmendorf Street, reached out to many different entities and faith entities who had potential space available. We also collaborated with elected officials in Ellenville to try to arrive at locating other sites, but unfortunately we were not successful. I would say that at this point, although we would be continuing to look for a viable site in Ellenville, our experience over the past year suggests that it might continue to be challenging.
That's too bad. Yeah. Legislator Petit.
Thank you. Going back to the increase in cost, I'm assuming that's because there's more people, yet our population hasn't been going up. So is there, I guess that would be a continuum of care question when they do their next survey, but is there a larger population
growing? No, it's not because of a larger population, and it's a great question, Legislator Petit, and I actually did some math in anticipation of answering that question. So, and try to follow me on this. I'll try to follow myself on it. So, considering that from November 1st to March 31st in Ulster County, you're normally going to find somewhere that the temperature is 32 degrees. And that's the activation trigger for having a Code Blue activation. So, if you take one individual who you're housing at, say, $90 per night in a hotel over that 5 months, that's an expenditure of $13,500. 25 people over that 5 months is $337,000. So it doesn't really necessarily pay for an incredibly large volume in terms of increase. Mm. It's essentially the same number of people. And what we also have been experiencing, which is something that we have to be able to be responsive to, is in as much as the warming center is one of the programs that's part of our plan, it's not able to accommodate all individuals who present during Code Blue activations, and it does not accommodate families. So it's not really a reflection of an increase in the population. It's a reflection just in the costs that are incurred when you're housing individuals who and families who need to be housed during Code Blue activations. And I think Michael, what it sounds essentially agree that the data that we're seeing and the placements that we're making reflect that.
I don't think that there are particularly more homeless people, but there are more people that cannot find affordable housing. And so if there are an increase of 30% or 40% on the people that are effectively homeless because they can't find affordable housing, that's what we're seeing. And it's devastating. I mean, any night of the week there may not be a motel room in our county. And we, I just signed a bill for $12,000 for Catskill. For last month. And, you know, we're happy to have that space, but the people are from here. Generally don't have cars. We paid $1,200 to Kingston Cab just to get them there and back. It's not the way it should be, but it's the only thing we're able to do.
Didn't social services provide some vehicles as part of the emergency housing? I know this is
We amended the family Woodstock contract to provide additional funding to have someone to coordinate arranging for transportation and to also potentially have a driver.
We have a driver who, if we cannot find any other way to get people to where they need to go, we'll call them out. We don't have a vehicle, but it'll use this.
Any other questions? All right. All those in favor of Resolution 342?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 343, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $100,000 entered into by the county with Family of Woodstock, Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Nolan. Second by Corcoran. And Commissioner Iapposi?
So this is a good segue into another category of expenditures that the county incurs, being able to provide emergency housing. So there's essentially three programs that exist that cover expenditures that counties incur for emergency housing. There's TANF for families, there's safety net for individuals and childless couples, and then during the Code Blue season, there's Code Blue. But we frequently end up housing individuals predominantly and sometimes families who don't end up falling into any of those categories. And this contract is a contract to be able to reimburse Family of Woodstock for expenses they incur for housing that category of emergency homeless. And what can happen is, and how this category is arrived at, is you frequently do have individuals who Family of Woodstock may house, and they're directed to come to the Department of Social Services to complete an application, and they don't end up following through. So Family of Woodstock has incurred the expense of housing them Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday night. For instance, if they house somebody this past Friday night for four nights, and that person did not follow through and show up at the Department of Social Services on Tuesday morning, we have no ability to open up a case for that person or to be able to determine eligibility and subsequently claim for the expense that was incurred. So that person was housed for four consecutive nights or the family was housed, and there has to be a mechanism to be able to reimburse Family of Woodstock for that. Now, we obviously do everything we can to engage those individuals and families, but sometimes they elect not to participate in completing an application, or on occasion they might start an application but not comply with the disclosure that's required. And then sometimes we have people that start an application, there's a determination made, they subsequently fail to comply, and they're sanctioned. So these are all kinds of scenarios that result in expenditures being incurred to house people that we can't claim reimbursement for. So that becomes a county expense.
Why can't we have them fill out these applications while they're on site?
During the evening when they're calling and Family Woodstock's emergency after hours hotline, they're not equipped with the ability to be able to complete those applications, process them. And honestly, some people are experiencing circumstances where they're not necessarily going to decide to follow through. And, you know,
But it seems like if they're there for multiple days, it seems like...
Well, Friday night, Saturday night, yeah. Sunday night, and then Monday night on a holiday weekend or any weekend, they're directed to report to
the
DSS.
The next business day, they're directed to go to the DSS.
But some do not, and we can't force them.
Because then we also have to provide transportation for them to get there.
Sometimes, but even... It isn't necessarily automatically that they can't get there.
Right.
They may not want to.
They may not want to
participate in the system. And they might not even be eligible for the system. But there is no way when somebody calls us and
but meanwhile you're left holding the bag for those people.
Fill out a DSS application over the phone. If they came to our offices and we often help people fill out applications. But over the middle of the night emergency situation,
right.
is the way for us to do that.
Yeah.
Deputy Executive Contreras, is that in relation to this question?
Yes.
Okay.
Relation to this resolution.
Yeah, sure.
The $149,000 is a not to exceed. It's proactive. We just want to make sure that we have the ability to reimburse families with stock if we need to. But so far, we're not past $49,000 yet. So this may be. And we're waiting for invoices. This may not get to anywhere near that amount.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you.
And then Petit.
Would it make any difference if instead of having the overnight operations come through family, if these individuals were able to go to DSS 24 hours a day and like they would 8 to 5 on a weekday and then go through the normal process, would we then be able to theoretically get reimbursed for that?
We would be in a better position. Most evenings over the past year or so, we are usually there till 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night with people that we're trying to place. Sometimes we're collaborating with Referrals to Family of Woodstock. It does increase our opportunity to get an application started with those people. If we went to a 24-hour-a-day operation where we discontinued having an after-hours emergency homeless provider and the Department of Social Services assumed responsibility for all of that, it would be going to a 24-hour operation 7 days a week with on-call. It would require conversations, obviously, with the union, and you know we'd have to make arrangements to be able to arrive at implementing something like that. We would still have occasions where individuals would potentially come to our offices, and Michael's familiar with this, who have waited until after hours to call for a placement because they don't, as Michael just said, want to engage the system. They don't want to disclose any of their information. They don't want to fill out an application. They, or whatever their circumstances or reasons are, my concern would be we might end up having more homeless people that would remain homeless on those overnight evenings because they were hesitant to come to DSS. That's just the reality of what some homeless individuals are experiencing and how they perceive the system.
Go ahead.
I think we should continue doing problem solving about this, but maybe not necessarily a lot more tonight. I think as we start to have other placements where there might be support staff in a more residential setting, like we are able to do at Samadhi, we are able to increase the percentage of people who fill out all the paperwork because we can go back to their door, again. So I think that the idea that there are ways to recoup more of this money from other sources is important and good, and we should follow up on it. But I think that the current situation is that we've been having to use the motels, which is bad for many reasons, and this is just another one of them, is that it contributes to this setting in which somebody is not connected. And though they may want that in some ways, that's not the healthiest for any individual long term. So having structures where we can coax and support and cajole, I think, is important at a human and mental health level, but also would be helpful financially to the county.
We're hoping, we're optimistic and encouraged by the fact that there's going to be a crisis stabilization center that may be able to be another option for some individuals, particularly during those overnight hours where some people don't have a comfort level, or feel like there's any place for them to be able to turn. So we do expect to be transacting work with the Crisis Stabilization Center, so that's something that we're anticipating, you know, being prepared for. And I plan to have conversations with mental health about that, so that we can be able to have referrals get arrived at in a timely fashion and supportive way.
Michael, did you want to add to that?
Well, I just wanted to point out, you know, you just gave us $320,000. That 100% reimburses the amount that we paid out. The only money that you've given us to do this overnight extra work is $114,000. Should you try and run the Department of Social Services for 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, the amount of money that you're going to save to spend is a huge amount. But I would point out one other thing. The people that we're putting in the motel who then turn out not to be eligible, if they go to the DSS in the middle of the night, the DSS is going to put them in the same motel as they can find it that we are. So you're not going to save any money. The people that are eligible that we send back to DSS, they get reimbursed back to the beginning when we put them in the housing because they're eligible. So there isn't a real savings in having the county run 24 hours. I think there's a significant cost factor.
I have a question about the original contract. The figure $49,000, how did you guys arrive at that figure?
Because a couple of years ago, before we had ESGCV money available in 21 and 22, we had a similar contract, and I believe it was about $29,000 that you had invoiced us for. So with inflation and the numbers we were seeing, we just basically arrived at having our fiscal department give us an estimate. So that's what the origins of that discussion.
That is a very convenient number, based on the fact that all contracts above $50,000 have to be approved by the legislature. So I'm not saying that it's not a coincidence,
that's
but I am pointing out that it does.
But in reality, we were only putting families up under the Code Blue program, and we didn't spend that much. Now we're putting the world up, and we spent over $300,000. But the original $49,000 would have covered our experience in running Code Blue prior years.
Yeah. And I don't want to come across as not supporting this program. I absolutely support this program, and I very much appreciate your work. And I want the legislature to be involved in this, and $49,000 contracts don't get us involved until they need to be amended.
Many times they don't end up needing to be amended is also part of it. And from the perspective where we're transacting programs and providing services, we like to have a ceiling that we, you know, might potentially not have to exceed. But if there is a ceiling that does exist, I would always lean towards going to the ceiling rather than going to 9 or 19 or 29 or 39. I guess it's a matter of we always base our estimates on what the prior expenses are that we were incurring. So I know a formula was applied to this. I understand, you know, acknowledging that it's at that level. And even at this point, we may not exceed the $49,000 because we haven't been invoiced for amounts that exceed that. Chairperson, but we wanted to get out in front of this so that our service provider doesn't run into a situation where they've incurred expenses that we're not in a position to be able to have the mechanism in place under the contract to promptly reimburse them. So we're bringing it to your attention before we exceeded that amount in anticipation that that could be a possibility.
Thank you. Deputy Executive, do you want to add to that?
No, well, just similarly, I just wanted to say I'm not aware of any desire to keep it under a certain amount. This is all proactive. The reason we're bringing it forward is so that you all can be involved and aware of the potential.
We appreciate that. Thank you. I really, really do appreciate it. All right. On Resolution 343, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Legislator Erner opposed?
Yep.
Okay. Legislator Erner opposed. Resolution number 330, dedicating funding to housing affordability, establishing a policy for its use, and authorizing the release of a notice of funding availability, NOFA, for 2023, Department of Planning. I have a motion to discuss.
Happy to move it.
All right. So moved by Nolan, second by Petit. And this resolution was the subject of our special meeting last week or 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. Before you are a number of amendments. The backstory on this is after we received the resolution from the county executive's team, our team, our staff made a number of suggestions. I wanted to give the county executive's team a heads up about the amendments just to clarify the legislature's process and a number of other things, which I'll go through in a second. When they were looking at that, they had a couple of other amendments that they wanted to make. This was postponed or no action taken in economic development last night.
Postponed.
So, and I understand the sensitivity to last-minute amendments. I will admit I was not expecting further amendments from the county executive's office until we received them today. I was just hoping to give them a heads up about the amendments I wanted to make. I'm thinking the one way we could go about this is I could just quickly walk us through the amendments that we've made, because I think they actually make a lot of sense. And if we feel comfortable with it, I'd at least like the committee to consider making the amendments tonight. Is everyone comfortable with me doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, Legislator Erner.
I have another technical amendment from, it looks like it wasn't changed from the last version I'd seen, which is from a few days ago.
Okay.
At the top of page 3,
yep.
That resolved, it says compliance with local law number 3 of 2023. I believe it's supposed to be local law number 2.
I think it is supposed to be number 3. Am I...
No, that was local law number 2.
It is supposed to be number 2?
I'm sorry.
Well, it was proposed local law number 2. I don't know what the number was changed to. The number changes when it's adopted and filed with the state, but I will check on that.
I believe this is something that our office changed when we received it. I think it is. I think when it was filed with the state, it was ultimately was local law number 3.
But elsewhere it's number 2 in this resolution.
Okay, so why don't we do this? If we do amend it, I'll read that into it as well, that all mentions of a local law refer to local law number 3.
Okay.
So we added an amendment to authorize the Commissioner of Finance.
Where are you?
This is on page 3. The amendments all start on page 3. We're offering an amendment to clarify the Commissioner of Finance's role in this. There are 4 resolved here. These are the ones that the county executive's team asked us to put in that basically clarify, first, the purpose of the funding. Second, the fact that this is going to conform with all New York State affordability guidelines. Third, and this is an important one, that the funds are not going to be used to help projects meet existing requirements, right, such as inclusionary zoning that a community might have already. And then fourth, that they can be used to support emergency housing, which is a huge focus. And it kind of lists all of the different types of housing that could happen here, but I'm very glad that emergency housing is included there.
Could I ask a question about
sure,
this?
Sure, go ahead.
So in terms of use, there's a situation that I've discussed with the W Executive Contreras of a housing situation that provides for multiple people. Would that situation qualify for funding?
Amanda has been taking lead on this, so
yeah. I don't want to give too many details here, but as I was reading through this, what I'm interested in being able to do is support existing housing that doesn't get support because it's either too small or too big for other programs. So as we're designing this program, I'd like to make sure that it catches that group. And it's basically boarding houses that are more than 11 units or whatever the small monies are, but less than 20, 30 or whatever the big monies are.
And I don't see any figures like that in here. And I think that the idea that they would provide low-income housing, which is true, because there's a lot of these boarding houses either take Section 8 or people on Medicare. So I'd like us to look at and make sure that we do capture not just the one place that I know of, but that I know is representative of multiple places across the county. Because building new housing has got to be more expensive, as we were hearing earlier, than supporting the places that are already doing this work and that have needs for new boilers or replacement with greener infrastructure. They need new roofs, and the roofs could be designed to hold solar. I mean, I think I would like to see this money that's set aside capture those that I think we've been missing in our prior work on this.
So the term boarding house always gives me pause in terms of whether we want to fund a boarding house or not fund a boarding house. And the questions that you would start to ask is, are there leases? Do we have a lease? How do we make sure that the boarding house remains affordable under that lease, et cetera? Are the conditions right in that? And then the main focus of this fund, as the county executive saw it in our discussions with the chair, have been that we were trying to create new units, although there is work here with respect to some maintenance of existing units. But we're trying to focus on new units. And then the question with respect to boarding house, always when you look at the funding sources and how fundings are distributed, the question is what constitutes a unit? So if you have an apartment or if you have a house, you know what a unit is. I don't know what a unit is in a boarding house. Is it a single bedroom with four people in it? Is it four bedrooms? I don't know how to define a unit. And I think that would require some coming back to the legislature, looking at the policy discussion and what's in ANOFA in terms of whether or not it could be funded. But I would be concerned about, one is condition, two is the fact that it's a boarding house, and then three is how do I define what constitutes a unit.
Follow up. I think it is important for us to continue that conversation because I think we can define all those things. And we've got we're putting out the NOFA, so we can say we will only count this, we will only count that. And if we do that, then we capture some of the boarding houses at least. Currently, I think that the kind of approach of we don't know how to deal with boarding houses has left us basically with a lot of boarding houses that aren't getting supported. And I do support building new, you know, adding to our stock. But if any of those places close and they can be sold to become a B&B very easily, they're readily structured for that, then we lose those units, and the amount of money to not lose them, I think, is very well spent. So I think we need to solve this problem as part of bringing this forward. I don't think it changes the language of the resolution that I've seen so far. I looked at it. I tried to, you know, work it through, but I'd like better minds than mine also look at it from this perspective. Can we get those outliers into the system so that we don't lose those structures? A lot of them are places like Elizabeth Manor that are very deeply appreciated by the communities that are served by them. So,
if I may.
Quickly, please.
What we're doing, if you're using Elizabeth Manor as an example, what we're doing with Elizabeth Manor comes under the rubric of emergency housing, and that's specifically mentioned in the resolution. So just be aware of that that's the case.
Well taken. Thank you.
So I just want to just ask the committee. You know, I had begun to read through the amendments. There are more amendments here than even I had anticipated. Because getting some from the county executive today, and I realize that it's a lot for everyone to digest. So we could go in two directions right now. We can kind of have an open conversation about this, or we can try and go through the amendments. I feel an incredible urgency to act on housing in this community. This is the most robust proposal that we've had on investing in housing. You guys know I've been putting forward legislation to try and get us to spend on creating units of housing for over a year now, and I'm eager to see this advance tonight, but I also realize that this is a lot coming at us all at once, and so I would entertain if folks are, I mean, don't make a motion, but just, I'm curious what people think about if we should have an open-ended conversation about this, or if we should go through the amendments, what the kind of temperature of the group is here.
I think we should go through the amendments. I think that this is the section where there was the most substantive concern. And I would just add to what I said previously, that if this only does new housing and doesn't do boarding houses, we should still do this. So let's go ahead and look at the more technical parts of this, I think, more quickly. But flag that if this doesn't capture what we want it to do, we either fix this or we do something subsequent that catches it.
Others? Legislator Petit, did you have a comment?
Thank you. I mean, these amendments were in the presentation and in the larger document, not necessarily the PowerPoint, so I'm comfortable even voting on it now. But and also just to go back to the non-traditional housing, I mean, it says co-housing,
yeah.
So potentially that
yeah.
could
there's,
be.
There's
mm-hmm.
a number
there's
of a lot.
Of, yeah.
There's a
mm-hmm.
lot of breadth here, and a lot of it is going to come
yeah.
down to appointing a
well-written
board
document.
That actually has involvement in housing and has lived experience in housing, and a lot of the amendments that our office suggested clarify how quickly that board should be established. They clarify ensuring, like one thing that we added in is making sure that there's always going to be representation in terms of an appointment from the minority party, which wasn't outlined previously. So I think that we cleaned it up quite a bit. So I can, if that's what folks feel, then I'll keep going through these, and please raise your hand if you have any comments or concerns. So going on from there, we're at the bottom of page 3. There's a update to just clarify the accounting and just making sure that the accounting is just very well documented. The next resolve was something that our office added that ensures that the Commissioner of Finance provides a report every year to the legislature. Then another resolved about having anything appropriating into the fund be through legislative resolution, not through any unilateral appropriation, not that anyone's trying to do that, but just clarifying that we expect resolutions as money is being put into the fund. We clarified that we will not have staff serving on the board. This came up a few years ago with the EDA, I believe. We really wanted to not see staff of either branch of government. And we also clarified here that we'll always have a representative from the minority party here as well. This is suggested from the county executive, and I completely agree with this, that we stagger the terms initially. So I think this is good tightening it up here, staggering the terms so that we don't have all the terms expiring all the time. So there's initial staggering. Also clarifying that people can continue after their terms end until someone is added. Outlining the objectives of the committee that's being formed to oversee the fund. Then we go into another resolution, another resolve that our office added that clarifying that they'll meet no later than 30 days after the first appointment is made. And how they will vote, this came from the county executive's office by a majority of their members. Now, just worth noting that when the oversight committee votes, that is voting on a recommendation that they send to the county executive that then gets to the legislature through resolution. So everything kind of goes through the legislature, even with this. And that is the responsibility of the county executive to convene the first meeting. This next resolved, we made a change here because the original language authorized the initial spending of, or it appeared to authorize the initial $3 million of spending for this year on housing. The truth is there needs to be a budget amendment that we'll need to receive from the county executive's office in order for that spending to happen. And because that, you know, can't be rolled in here, we just toned down the language. So I believe it's, or maybe I'm thinking of a different amendment, but basically just clarifying that this is an amendment about the liaison. Sorry, that's going to come up in a second. This is an amendment from our office just
that's
clarifying the language.
Six, I think, what you were just talking
about. I'll get to that in a moment. Further amendments that just clarify the financial reporting. and ensuring that we're going to receive reports and kind of going on to into pretty robust detail about that. And then on to page six, that the this is going to be included in the budget process, so clarifying that the budget, this is going to be part of the budget process every year. And then, yeah, this is the resolved, kind of midway, just below, halfway down the page, that says that we're not authorizing the $3 million, but we anticipate them formally asking for that through a budget amendment. And then the final resolve that we added here was that the Commissioner of Finance may, at their discretion, invest the money. This is something that's come up recently about money just sitting in bank accounts, so that we can actually have investment gains on any funds that are just sitting around. And those are the amendments. I think that they're do a really good job of tightening things up. I think our office did a great job, and the County Executive's Office did a great job working together on this, and I will open the floor to any further questions on it.
I make a motion that we accept all the amendments as proposed.
Including changing the consistency around the local law numbers.
Yes, but I'd like that to be that they be consistent and they be correct.
Yeah, exactly. Legislator Nolan, made a motion. Can I? Is there a second? Yep, second by Legislator Corcoran. All right, so we're in discussion on the motion. Director Doyle, did you want to make a comment?
First of all, I want to really congratulate the legislature, and I think the cooperation that's been shown here with respect to the legislative staff, the members of the legislature, and the county executive has been exceptional, and I really appreciate that. There's one thing I think that I personally would like to change, and it's on page six. It's the fourth resolve from the bottom, which basically says that the applications for funding shall be part of the annual budget process. And my sense of that is if we release, think of this of what happens in terms of grant funding. If we release a notice of funding availability, the thought that I have is that making that part of the annual budgeting process is, think of this as what you did with ARPA. You basically went through and you allocated funds based on applications you received on a timely basis. And we want to think about how we're going to time these applications so that they may conform to other applications at a state or federal level that come in. And rather than waiting for awards in a budget process where everybody's busy, everybody's concerned, everybody's confused, and there's a lot of things going on, the idea that you're taking applications during the regular business of the legislature and moving money from an assigned fund balance, which all it is assigned, to essentially an appropriation, would be similar to what you did with respect to ARPA. It's also similar to what you do with every contract that comes through. We're going to have a contract with an entity that essentially says we're going to award you a particular set of funds. And that's why I think it would be appropriate not to tie this to an annual budgeting process where all of those recommendations and all of that attention is essentially going to come through at the same time, but to tie it to when we're able to release a NOFA and when we get responses back from that NOFA.
Yeah. That's a good point. I would support that.
I support that, but I like having it as part of the budget process and as an ideal, so I would suggest for that resolve that we amend it as part of the annual budget process or as needed.
That's fine.
It covers both. So I amend my motion to incorporate that amendment as well.
Alright. Any other?
And is the second okay with
Tom,
that?
Tom, are you okay with that?
Yep.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Otherwise I'll call a question on the amendments. Yeah, Legislator Erner.
So I raised this during the administration's presentation, and I want to do this, and I'm also concerned that we're not, well, a couple things. We're not, so it's, as far as the amendments, I know that the administration had recommended who should serve on the Housing Policy and Oversight Committee, and then I had asked about the lived experience, and Chair, you had mentioned that, but I don't see any of that specified here, and if we were, I would prefer to specify somehow or other that some members, if even a majority of the membership of that committee be those who are currently or have experienced housing instability or insecurity or homelessness. I think that's who should be guiding our decisions around this.
Yeah, I'm sympathetic with the aim, and I think that that was expressed in some of the replies that you got, that you received. I think that those types of specifications often cause unexpected difficulties. It may be that there are seven people that could all fit that description, that could all step forward, but in other years it might be zero. So I think putting that in as an aspiration, and maybe we need to have that language in there so that it's clear that it is an aspiration, is better than a requirement. Because, I mean, we run into it on the Trails Advisory Committee. We're supposed to have somebody representing bike path, and not just pedestrian. And some, well, actually what it comes up with more is horses. Some years we just don't have anybody in Ulster County, and somebody won't come from Orange County to be on the committee with us. But we want to hear from the horse people, and we, you know, put it in there, but we don't require. We put it in as a category of, you know, trying to achieve diversity. So some language that allows you to point towards the desire to incorporate that perspective. It is also I think it's important to have the perspective of somebody who's receiving this kind of support, but the person who's receiving this kind of support may not have the skill set and experience to work on the allocations for the other types of experience that they don't have. So somebody who's experienced emergency housing might not know about mental health housing, for example, or some other variation on that. So I guess I would ask you to suggest language, and I would, you know, be supportive of language that's hortatory, that's encouraging for this, aspirational, but I'd be against language that ties it down too tightly, because we don't have anything to stop this commission from functioning.
Yeah, and I'll if I may add to that, one thing with situations like that comes up is when you are forced to recruit people that are directly impacted and frankly are experiencing poverty in that moment. This is essentially unpaid work, and it's kind of like I heard a story. Well, maybe that's not a good story for today, but it's, you know, sometimes the person who's the victim shouldn't be the one who's tasked with doing the free work to solve the problem. So I would support an amendment to always endeavor to have people with lived experience experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity as to the fullest extent possible. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate the comparison. I think the comparison to the Trails Committee, to me this is different, because this committee's specific purpose is to support housing that many people in our county can't afford, haven't been affording, and then the people who decide what we're going to spend the money on for the affordable housing, if they don't have that experience, how are they going to make the best decision? I am all for paying people on this, by the way. If that's what prevents us from putting impacted folks on here, then let's pay them. There can be a new thing in this county where we actually pay our boards and commissions, starting with this one. I would support, for that matter, traveling around to folks who are experiencing that right now, separate and apart from this, and interviewing them to understand what they need in that situation right now if they're in emergency housing that we're responsible for. But I would have no problem paying. Unfortunately, I don't have specific language to suggest what the criteria ought to be right now for the board members who are impacted, but I'm not going to be able to support this policy, the amendments, unless there's something about that. I'm not going to say no to the policy overall, but yeah.
May I make a suggestion?
Yes.
So I really want to make sure that this gets amended tonight. with these amendments. It's already been postponed in economic development. You can, the amendment that you're describing, if you want to work on language, and I'll work on that with you, I'll commit to doing that, that could either be amended on the floor, it could be amended in economic development, it could be amended in this committee next month. If it doesn't, you know, if that's the way that it kind of shakes out, it could be amended in ways and means. So that, just because we make these amendments now doesn't mean further amendments aren't possible. And if you're not ready with language tonight, we'll have opportunities to do that.
Okay.
Because I really appreciate the direction that you're going in.
Thank you. I have one more.
Yep, go ahead.
Comment on this, on the amendment, the amendments. I had also said in the response to the administration's presentation that I'd asked about, can this be used to, say, cover someone's rent or cover someone's mortgage payment they weren't able to make to a bank, et cetera, and so forth. And the answer was no, that's not what this is intended for. And I'm extremely concerned that we have not yet allocated county resources toward that sort of thing, which is the front line, as far as I'm concerned, of the housing emergency. The fact that people right now could stay in their home if for having that money. So I would just like to know why this doesn't do that.
Well, this is that is something that is that's a program that any of us could put forward at any moment, and we have put forward programs to fund rental improvements and affordability for rentals. We've put forward programs that fund legal services, and obviously it would be a question if the votes are there for direct payments for rent. It's something I would definitely consider supporting. But this is really intended to create units of housing. And that's my perspective on it.
Yeah, I would agree with keeping that separate and looking at doing it. I think you run into issues with unconstitutional gifts under our current system. The county can't just buy firewood for somebody and give that person firewood unless they're doing it for everybody. So it has to be looked at from the legality of using the public purse for individual benefits. And I know that's not your intent. You want to serve the whole population. But the way you set that up to implement that has to take into account existing laws, or we trip up on that. So I don't think it's an easy kind of add to this. It's its own standalone program, and worth looking into how to do it in a way that avoids those constitutional issues, in my view.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just curious, do we know, we don't have counsel here, but we essentially subsidize people's housing all the time. It's called what DSS does, or what we do through Family of Woodstock. We're emergency housing people. Imagine instead we could just keep them from losing their housing. To me, that's better, probably cheaper, and the same concept. Are we to believe that one is constitutional and one is not?
I just really, like, if that's a program that you want to put forward, please put that program forward. This is a different program. I'm sorry to be so blunt. Like, I agree that that's really important. And I would really encourage you to submit a resolution that achieves that.
And the short answer is yes, that we have as a society, perhaps irrationally, said that if somebody falls down low enough, we will help pick them up, but we will not stop them from falling. And your pointing to the irrationality of that, I think, is very helpful.
Yeah.
But we have to acknowledge that our current system has in it this kind of kink, which leads to paying for motels at rates that are much higher than we would potentially pay if we were just subsidizing a tiny fraction of that to their rent and keeping them in their house. So you're pointing to a problem in the system, but let's build some more housing and do this, and then I think you're building support for the program that you'd like to see in addition to this. And whether you vote to approve the amendments, I think is, you know, you have reasons for doing that. But my feeling is I could work with you on this, work with the UN legislator, Uchitel, on this, but not seen as competitive or in any way undercut by this. This could just lead to more people being in houses that get those subsidies that we find a way to put in place.
Legislator Petit.
I just move forward with some of the comments. I mean, this resolution provides more permanency. It provides a solution. I was thinking if I had, you know, want to repair some of the bathrooms so I can invite three more people into my house, it would give me the opportunity to put essentially three more units on the market. We have Section 8, we have family self-sufficiency programs, and we could, and I'd be happy to help you with that too, and I believe there's some ARPA funding, but to put in if somebody's getting behind on their mortgage, especially with the cost of living going up so high. But this is more permanent. This will actually create something rather than a Band-Aid that perhaps further down the road won't be enough to hold it together. You know, we need these units right now. And paying $3,000 a month, I mean, that's a pretty darn nice apartment if we can get them built. But, yeah, I'd really like to move forward on this. I would have liked to have moved forward on it 3 months ago, or a year ago, when it was originally proposed. But the executive's office has done a really great job, and it does follow the housing committees that first came out with Pattern for Progress, where they produced a report, and then the sustainable housing. It's all incorporated into here.
Yeah, so perhaps with that, I'd like to call the question on the amendments.
You write that resolution.
So are we, any other comment, any other discussion on the amendments? This is not the vote on the resolution. This is just on the adopting the amendments. All right, so I'll call the question. All those in favor of the amendments?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any further discussion on the resolution?
Nope.
Knowing that it's still going to have to go before a number of other committees. So it'll probably be in our old business next month anyway, unless they hold a special meeting, but I would love to advance it out of this committee if we can. So any other discussion on advancing it out of the Health Committee? And I'll just mention, you know, I'm going to go to every meeting where this is on the agenda moving forward for other committees, and if they have issues where there are major amendments, I'm going to ask them to refer it back to us so that we can make the amendments here. Because I think if it's substantive, I would want this committee, who sat through the presentation and are becoming experts on this. All right. Well, with that, all those in favor of Legislator Erner?
No. No.
Okay.
Voting.
All those in favor of Resolution 330 as amended?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Great. Thank you so much. So that is the last amendment. Sorry, that's the last resolution for consideration. Tonight, two resolutions I asked to be put into old business. They were mine, so I felt comfortable doing that. I will, as this advances, I will likely be withdrawing 126, which is the original fund to Housing Justice Fund. Really seems kind of to pale in comparison to this one. And then, as I mentioned previously, because we're studying the emergency housing situation now, I'm going to hold off on asking for a vote on 127, which is another one of mine. And then, just so everyone's aware, you're probably already aware, Resolution 134 regarding freedom of choice and COVID-19 shots had a successful petition to discharge that will be on the floor of the legislature. We had voted it down in the committee. But it will be on this month's session agenda. And with that, you have Legislator Erner and then Stewart.
And is it in order to ask a question about one of those resolutions in old business?
That's what we're on in the agenda right now. Yep.
Okay.
Ahead.
Thank you. 126 had proposed to devote $20 million to this purpose, and the new policy we have before us is $15 million?
Yeah.
Can we?
So I was thinking about this a lot today, if I may. So the resolution stipulates that we're not to spend more than 20% of the fund in any given year. We also have additional sources of revenue that I personally am hoping to establish, such as when we get the occupancy tax back in front of us, we can always allocate more money to this. $15 million is not going to get spent this year, and so I feel more confident asking for more money once we've seen this work. That's personally how I feel about it, And I don't think if we added 20 million, if we made it $20 million instead of 15, I don't think that action is going to create more housing, personally. I think if we create housing with the 15, the extra 5 will be an easy ask. We'll probably ask for a lot more than that because it'll be a successful program.
Thank you.
Director Doyle. Oh, and sorry, Legislator Stewart, you were next.
My question had to do with the tour tomorrow.
Okay.
Of the motels.
Before we get to that, was yours related to what Phil said?
No, okay. It's a point of information and a.
Then let's hold off on that. I'd like to have Legislator Stewart's question answered about the tour.
So, I had responded that I have a conflict with another committee meeting tomorrow, but I was curious, when is that going to start? It starts at 1:00. Is that correct?
Yeah. Starts at 1:00. I don't even have details yet. I need to spend, I'm sorry, about
right.
the last minute
no worries.
Nature of this. So I'm still trying to figure out where we're starting, but it starts at 1:00, and then so there's no set schedule because we're just going to go, from 1:00 to the next.
Right.
So once I find that out, I can send it out. Have we decided who is able to come?
Well, that was my other question.
Yeah.
Who else on the committee would be able
to
attend?
I don't know. I know I'm not going to join because I've already been to all 3 of those motels, personally. I've been to 4 of all, actually. I've been to 5 or 6 of, or 7 of the motels that we house people in emergency housing, so I've definitely seen what's going on.
And I am available to go, but I have experience with other motels, so if there are people who want to go, I would.
Yeah, well... And just to be clear, the reason that we're having this conversation is because this is an informal trip, and we are not going to, this is not a committee meeting, there's no formal business, and if individual legislators go, we have to ensure that there's not committee business being done, and I just want to be clear about that. I'm sorry to interrupt.
So how many folks are going then?
It
can't be more than 3 of us? Or?
Yeah.
Right,
well,
and I was going to say, since I can't attend.
Because we have CSS, DOH,
right.
us, and then you all, so just trying not to be super disruptive, so.
And I didn't want to attend since I'm not able to be there for the entire time, I didn't want to take someone else's slot. So if someone else would prefer and is able to make use of that time, I would say please go.
Yeah, so I'm very confident that we're not going to run into quorum issues. Let's figure that out as a follow-up, though, if that's all right. Yeah. Any other comments or otherwise
Just 2 points of information. One of them actually goes back to Legislator Murr's comment in terms of 15 versus 20 million. One of the reasons that we looked at the 20% is every county that has done this has told us that the main reason you're successful in a housing fund of this nature is that it's done on an annual basis and it keeps getting done. And so people expect it as a funding source. And it becomes much more programmatic in terms of getting people to participate. So that's the one reason that we looked at this in terms of releasing it. The other thing I would want to say is that I would hope that if there's an opportunity that the 15 million would go to 20 million and we would look at how that opportunity fits into with our long-term needs, particularly with respect to emergency housing. I think we have some real issues with respect to emergency housing. We may have opportunities that come up that essentially require us to act on those opportunities. And some of those opportunities have to do with the fact that the economics are now, in Ulster County, are now that the hotels that you use essentially for housing, some of your emergency housing, are now offered for sale and being converted to other uses and not being available for emergency housing. So you need to be aware of that. You need to understand that that really cuts down on your emergency housing supply. So that's the first thing, and I appreciate the opportunity to make that comment. The second thing I wanted to let you know, it's a point of information, I don't know whether you're aware of this, but the Supreme Court made a decision with respect to the foreclosure sales, which that Supreme Court decision is likely to affect. New York is there are 36 states that essentially provide for if you sell a home for back taxes, that once you pay yourself your back taxes and administrative fees, any remaining funds goes to the homeowner, right? Supreme Court ruled in favor of the person that didn't get that money, and it would be a taking. So now when you start looking at your MRIM foreclosure process,
that affirmative foreclosure process is likely to, we're likely to see legislation and or at least caution with respect to our in-rem foreclosure and sales, that we maintain that those monies because it may have to go back to the original owner. So the one of the things we're looking at is whether or not there's going to be significant funding that could be available from the in-rem foreclosure process. The short answer is I think in the long, certainly in the long term, that's not likely to happen given that Supreme Court decision. And we would expect that the state of New York and or others is going to move to amend the Article 11 of the law that allows them essentially to recoup, the owners or heirs to recoup those sales. So just be aware of that. It's out there. I think the county did put off its, the county did mm-hmm. postpone its tax sales on the basis of that decision.
Hmm. Any questions on that? Otherwise, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. All right. Moved by Erner. And have a second.
Second.
Second by Nolan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Anybody opposed? I hope not.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.